we can get to our interview with Dr. Stacy Good. She's Chief Medical Officer from Emergency Physician and Nurse and Acute Care Manager Andrew Chapin from Bonner General Health. I just, before we start our interview and hear all about our wonderful rural healthcare facility, Bonner General Health, I just want to say thank you to Bonner General Health. They are one of the valued and essential underwriters for KRFY. This is our community radio station. It's independent, it's commercial-free, and it's a nonprofit. So Bonner General Health is an underwriter, and we appreciate that so much. So let's just get to the interview. I think it's always good to start with an overview of Bonner General Health. What is it, and the importance of this type of healthcare facility? It is a hospital in our North Idaho community. What does having Bonner General Health bring to our community? What is it? A little history would be nice, because as we all know, there's a lot of people moving in, new listeners all the time. So let's speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a quick overview. So we were incorporated in 1949. We just had our 75th anniversary this past summer. We are a nonprofit hospital, and we're also a critical access hospital. So really, the nonprofit piece just means that any money that we make just goes back into the facility for upgrades, for increased wages, those sort of things. The critical access hospital piece is kind of the rural hospital name and designation. And really what that is a CMS designation. So that's a Medicare designation. And there are certain criteria that we have to meet, and one of which is that we can't have more than 25 patients in the hospital at one time. We have to be a certain amount, a distance from any other hospital. And what that it really comes down to is our reimbursement. We get paid based on cost versus some other hospitals, such as Kootenai, get paid a flat fee based on the amount of days of patients in the hospital. So it really is just kind of a difference in how we get reimbursed from CMS.
So let's just back up. CMS is what?
Center for Medicare and Medicaid.
Oh, okay. I should know that.
Yeah, sorry
but I
about
don't,
that.
But that's okay.
And yeah, so with being a critical access hospital, we really do function more like a community hospital. We have 76 medical providers within our medical staff, which is a large amount for a small hospital, and more than half of those live locally. And some of them are independent, some of them are employed through the hospital, and with the multiple service lines that we do offer.
So when you say independent, they kind of, they have like contracts with a hospital.
Yeah,
independent contractors.
Mm-hmm, so they have their own outside business. For instance, Sandpoint Surgical Associates contracts through the hospital. Some of our orthopedic surgeons do. We employ some emergency department physicians are their own group that contracts with the hospital.
And most of those live here.
Correct.
And they just have their own private practice, so to speak, but you work with them because they're the experts and you bring them into the work of the hospital. When you say it's limited to 25 patients, that's kind of the criteria for it being a critical access hospital. It seems like that's an important designation.
It is. We really only ran up to that number in COVID, and there was some legislature that let us go above that 25 patient number. But up until probably 6 months ago, our average census was anywhere between 8 and 10. Andrew can talk about kind of a little bit what's happening now with individuals moving here, but our census is slowly creeping up, but we haven't even come close to that 25 number.
Yeah, we have 20 beds on the acute care side and 5 over in the ICU. In the last year, yeah, our average census between 8, 10, 11 patients. But since a couple weeks before Christmas, we've really just been cruising over here. We've been sitting 15, 16, 17, even 18 at times, which is pretty busy for us.
I know there's been some changes last year, I guess. We no longer have a birth center, a birth services at the hospital. How did that affect that limit of 25?
So we did have 6 beds in our OB unit, so now those are going to be those have been transitioned to the acute care and the ICU and then to the swing bed program, which we'll discuss a little bit later.
Do you see that a birth services will be coming, OBGYN services will be coming back? Or is that not clear yet?
It's not clear. It's my hope and dream. It's a necessity here, especially the gynecology piece, the surgical gyne piece. And so that's one of, you know, my goals is to make that happen.
And I know that we've had folks on the radio talking about that in depth. And it wasn't just legal reasons that made that decision originally. It was kind of like a financial or does this make sense to carry this component in the hospital when they got rid of the OBGYN services?
Yeah, it was really complicated, and unfortunately it was a perfect storm that all kind of happened at once. Yes, the legislature was part of it. The other big pieces, though, were the decreasing amount of births that were happening in our town, the lack of pediatric coverage. Bonner General doesn't employ pediatricians, so we had to rely on outside pediatricians, and they did not want to take call. And then the biggest piece from just the sustainability was the reimbursement. We were losing over $2 million a year because of decreased births. At one point, we were doing 400 births a year. We were getting down to 200. And we would do all the prenatal care, and then often those patients would go down to Kootenai to deliver. So all those things kind of happened at once, and how it rolled out was unfortunate. And there were some things we would do differently, but unfortunately, for the long-term sustainability for the hospital, it was something that had to happen.
Okay, well, I want to back up because I forgot a critical piece of this. I would like a little introduction to what you do at the hospital. I missed that point. So, Andrew, you are the RN and acute care manager at the hospital, and Andrew Chapin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? And like you said before the show started, you've been here. You were born here, and so yep. is a lot of your family. Yeah, give us a little history of you and what you do at the hospital.
Yeah, well, I'm Andrew Chapin. Like you said, I was actually born on the unit that I work on, and I'm about the fifth, sixth generation born here in Sandpoint. So a lot of my family members have been through the hospital and born here and been treated. So it's a personal endeavor for me. But I grew up here. I went to high school here. I went to school at NIC and then ended up coming back after doing some travel nursing and living in Hawaii for a bit and took over the management role about a year ago on acute care. So I oversee the daily activities of the acute care unit and just kind of keep it flowing. The nurses do all the real hard work and I just help them take care of the community.
What, when you say acute care, can you
sure
kind yeah. of give us a picture of what that means?
So acute care, we have two units. We have the ICU and we have the acute care side. Acute care is medical, surgical type patients. Medical patients being your pneumonias, flus, skin infections, strokes, things of that nature. We also do the surgical recovery after they come out. So we're doing post-op hips, total knees, shoulders, any abdominal surgeries type stuff. We do it all. We're jack of all trades up there. So acute care encompasses all of that.
Well, in a small hospital, you don't have the specialists coming in. So you have to really, if you're saying, what did you call this part?
Abdominal.
Abdominal surgery, after surgeries, knee, hips. And also the medical side, you have to really have a large picture of how to care for these people.
Yeah, my nurses are special in the sense that they're able to take care of a wide range of patients. But we do have specialized doctors. We have orthodocs that do the hips, the knees. We have orthodocs that are, specialized in the shoulders. And so we also have general surgeons that do your abdominal surgeries. So we do have some specialties that are coming through.
Sure.
We just got a new Dr. Yackel. He is does back surgeries, and he's doing those occasionally up here. So we're adding some new stuff coming through too.
So it's kind of always on the cutting edge, it sounds like.
Yeah, we're always adapting to the patient population. Like you said, we're growing. We're getting a lot of people moving in that are having healthcare needs. They're at that age where they want a new hip or a new knee. So we see a lot of those come through the hospital. And then we do have the ICU. It's 5 beds down on the other side. They take the more critical patients that come in.
So through the emergency?
Yeah, everyone kind of comes through them.
Things like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I will say that it's pretty unique to have a rural hospital that has an ICU. A lot of rural hospitals will transfer any patients that need that level of care. And the fact that we can keep intubated patients here, patients that need higher level of respiratory care, central lines, those sort of things, we're able to keep those in our community, which is a huge asset.
What makes that possible? You mentioned intubating, but what else makes that possible? A level of doctor, nurse care, understanding.
Equipment.
So equipment.
Yeah.
Well, and physicians. We, our hospitalists, Dr. Crane has been kind of the main hospitalist, and he really is kind of a unicorn in how he practices, but he practices both as a hospitalist and an intensivist. And so one of the projects that I've been working on is, you know, finding physicians that he can mentor for that kind of next generation so that we can keep those patients here.
Well, moving into Dr. Stacy Good, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You're the chief medical officer and emergency physician. Give us a little background. How did you get here and what do you do at the hospital?
So I moved here. My husband and I did 8 years ago. He's also an ER physician. He does call me Dr. Better, but I think that's because he's married to me. So if you get Dr. Good in the ER, it's often one of us. Both of us we met in the Army. I was in the military for 8 years. Did my training out in Tacoma, Washington at Joint Base Lewis-McChord at Madigan Army Medical Center, and actually came out here with a colleague who has a property down in Bayview, and I was like, what is this amazing place? A few years later, Army moved us to El Paso, Texas, spent some time there, and then when we were getting out, kind of we're looking for different places and ended up here in Sandpoint, which is another interesting story. And was pretty much full-time in the ER, and then when COVID happened, I was the chief of the medical staff, which eventually rolled into the chief medical officer position, and I've taken that on full time, and then I work a couple shifts still in the emergency department.
It sounds like it's really important to have that chief medical officer on board, even in a small hospital. It's not really that small, but I mean, it's very comprehensive and really serving the community. But it seems like having, I guess all hospitals probably have that.
Yeah, it's important administratively to have the clinical side of things, which is our chief nursing officer, Becky Dotson, and myself. And that was kind of one of the pushes kind of early on in COVID was, hey, if we're making administrative decisions, they need to also put the patients first. And so that's kind of where my passion comes in, and doing it in a small organization really allows for tangible change. And our physicians and our medical staff actually have a really good relationship with our administration, which is not the case in a lot of hospitals, which is kind of what I love about my job.
And you just mentioned the word change. So you're always looking into, I'm wondering if you're part of an association of 25 beds or less hospitals, critical care hospitals in rural areas, you know, to learn new things, things that keep it viable and up to date.
Well, we're part of the Idaho Hospital Association. We also are, though, the Northwest Hospital Alliance, which is 8 hospitals kind of in the Northwest region, which includes 7 rural access hospitals, critical access hospitals, plus Kootenai. And we get together as a full group once a year, and then kind of the smaller groups get together and kind of, you know, help each other and learn things from each other.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get to a little bit more of the comprehensive, not just the critical care aspect, but the highlights, the comprehensive offerings at Bonner General Health. there's the surgery, there's the in care, but there's a bigger picture. Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, so I oversee our clinics. We have 7 clinics right now. So we have Sandpoint Women's Health, Internal Medicine, which we brought on last year, which was Dr. Crane and Paige Russell's independent clinic, and then Family Practice, which we've added 4 new providers in this last year. We also have Orthopedics, Behavioral Health, which is a mix of counselors, therapists, psychologists, and psychiatric nurse practitioners. And then we also have ophthalmology and our infusion procedure clinic. Kind of on the ancillary services side, you know, our imaging department is busting. We're really growing that. We have 2 CT scanners, 2 mammography machines, a DEXA, ultrasound, echocardiograms, you know, your basic x-ray imaging lab services. And then performance therapy is kind of encompassing PT, OT, speech therapy, which both is on the outpatient side as well as on the inpatient side, which we'll, Andrew will talk a little bit about the transitional care program, their role in that. Hospice is another service that we offer, which is a great asset to our community. Trying to think what else am I missing.
Nailed it. That's a lot.
Yeah. Very comprehensive. Looking at, it sounds like it's developing all the time to really meet the needs in the community. So you see where there's a gap or you see where there's a place to bring in more. How do you recruit people to come to fill these positions in these different clinics, as you call them?
Yeah, it's difficult. Partially because of the cost of living here, and just kind of like the cost of labor that doesn't really equate to the cost of living. However, we still live in this incredible place that's has a playground in your backyard and a mountain and a lake. So that's definitely the driving force. But that is the kind of major issue when it comes to recruitment. And I think Andrew has probably a little more insight to that.
Yeah, we brought on, I think, 8 new nurses in the last year to my unit. And really the selling point for us has been that Bonner General Health is still a small local community, you know, hospital where we help the local community. And you see them out and about. You see them at the beach. You see them at the festivals. You see them around town at Walmart. And that's a nice aspect. I think the trend in the country is lower staffing and higher acuity of patients. And it's getting really hard on some of the nurses in these bigger hospitals where you're treated like a number and you don't have the tools to take care of the patients. And here at Bonner General, we keep our ratios really good for our nurses. So they're able to provide really good care for our patients. And then that relationship with administration, you know, we have a good relationship with our senior leadership team where we can solve problems and work through things. And kind of like Stacy was saying, that's not common for a lot of the hospitals. And so really we market it that way, the culture that BGH has. And, you know, we were able to fill those roles that we needed on my unit last year.
It just leads me to thinking about, you mentioned the cost of living is high here. And then you offer to the employees a really great work environment and support in doing what they love and what they've chosen as their work. How does that affect the cost? And that kind of moves into our question about costs and how it all works. Does the cost of being in the hospital, surgery, acute care, things like that, go up to meet the needs of having a good ratio of nurses to patients and recruiting people to a place where the cost of living is a little higher? I'm thinking about housing, you know. So did you get the question?
Yeah, I mean, kind of Stacy can speak to this too. I mean, we only get reimbursed a certain amount from the insurance companies. You know, the cost of doing business goes up, but we only get paid what we get paid. So we battle that just like all hospitals do. We try to be competitive. We try to offer, you know, signing bonuses, help with moving, doing things that we can do to help people get here and just try to stay competitive with the hospitals that are around us. But I mean, the reimbursement factor for us is limited to the what the insurance, you know, pays.
Yeah, and I can get a little bit more into that. I will say that one of our challenges is that we have Washington right next door. And our minimum wage is, what, $7 and some change, and Washington's is close to $20. And our cost of living is not very different across the border. So that is something that we do struggle with. And having Kootenai just south of us, where they can pay their staff, especially their nurses, more. And we are one of two hospitals in the state that also has a nursing union, which limits us as well. From the cost and reimbursement side, it's a really interesting question and kind of financial situation that healthcare is in right now. For costs, so back in 2014, we used to get paid 101% on Medicare patients on cost. They, like everyone, had cut cost somewhere and save money. So now we get reimbursed 99% on cost. So we lose money on every Medicare patient that we bring in. So between Medicare, Medicaid, and then our uninsured, that's about 70% of the patients that we see. So we really function on that other 30%. So that 30% is your private payers. That's your Blue Cross, your Humana, your United. And so that's where we try to make up that other amount of money. And so as Medicare continues to decrease reimbursement, what happens is the private insurers kind of follow suit. So, for instance, in this last year, we got paid 53% reimbursement on anything that went out to patients. So that's 47%. Is written off. So let's say a surgery gets charged, let's say $10,000 for the surgery. 47% of that we never even see. And the other 53%, we have to fight tooth and nail with the insurance companies to receive those funds. Now, Medicare, we get it, but it's going to be even less. So we can charge, more than $10,000, but that reimbursement's fixed. So, as after COVID happened, most businesses, inflation occurred, and so most businesses were able to kind of increase how much they charge for different things. We are really kind of stuck on Medicare and the private payers, what they're going to reimburse us. So it requires us to be really creative in how we bring in those funds. And it really makes us look at like social determinants of health. What is our demographic in the area? What is happening to it? And what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of older individuals move here, but a lot of older, healthy individuals. So with that, we have to provide services on, that A, cater to those needs, but B, also reimburse well. And unfortunately, elective procedures like hips and knees reimburse really well. So do, imaging modalities. And so really, our goal is to kind of boost those service lines to then subsidize the other needs in our community. And I know you brought up OB earlier, and it would have been really great to have the foresight years and years ago to be like, hey, how can we subsidize this by boosting these other service lines? And unfortunately, that all just kind of came crashing down. But that's kind of how we are looking at things as we are continuing to build service lines and kind of grow our hospital. Within the last year, Andrew said, so we brought on spine surgery. Dr. Yackel is coming up here. And then we also brought on primary care with internal medicine. So we're, one of those is a really good reimburser. One of them is not, but the referring services that internal medicine provides, plus the primary care needs that it serves in our community, is essential.
It is such a comprehensive picture. It sounds like balancing is one of the key things that you're always looking for to find. Where can we find it? And the ultimate goal is one thing, to provide services as a medical facility. It's kind of that Hippocratic oath kind of thing, right? To be there. What is the mission of Bonner General? I've got this here. It's the mission of Bonner General Health is to improve health, inspire hope, and save lives. and we're proud to offer a variety of healthcare services in our community. And it sounds like you're always moving forward in that picture because it's not a static thing.
No, never.
Never. So I was thinking also about the balance between the medical and when you say reimbursement, and there's the administrative side that is huge and never ending.
Yeah, my eyes were open to that as I came into this CMO role several years ago. And I do just kind of want to mention that, you know, we have five individuals on our senior leadership team, and three of them are new within the last 18 months. Our previous CFO, John Hennessy, became our CEO, and he's a brilliant financial mastermind. And then Skylar Twite came up from Kootenai and is our CFO. And then Becky, who was one of our directors in nursing, is now our CNO. So we have, I think, a motivated senior leadership team. And then our managers and directors, Andrew being one of them, and I'll embarrass him for a moment here, but he's phenomenal. And just having the managers who have worked in bigger places have that knowledge and then can bring it to a rural hospital is really integral, and it really is a unique place.
So, Andrew, what makes you phenomenal?
That he
You'll
can staff
my wife.
Well, he can staff nurses on the acute care floor. It's a hard. What he said, they're the jack of all trades, but it's a hard place,
and it's constantly changing depending on the patients in the ward at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's needed?
Yeah, it's we're always adapting. You learn something, and then something new comes up, and you tackle that problem. So, yeah, I have very special nurses that work on my unit. I have a wide diversity of nurses. I have nurses that have been here for 25, 26 years in the community. I have some in the middle, and then I have some fresh faces that just came out of nursing school. So it's kind of a nice mix of what I run. Mm-hmm. But it takes a special nurse for sure to do the job up there in acute care.
It sounds like you're a jack of all trades, but I'm wondering, are there times when you step in as a care nurse?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I wear scrubs to work. I worked as a nurse for the last 15 years, everywhere from Barrow, Alaska, down all through the Hawaiian Islands. I've seen a fair bit of things, and I enjoy the patient care side. And even taking this management role, that was important for me to stay active with my patients. So senior leadership gives me the ability to round and help out. I put in IVs, I'll change patients, I'll do whatever. My office is right there on the floor with the nurses, so we kind of take a team approach to it.
Right. You have to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and it gives you a better idea of what's happening on the floor, mm-hmm. And how to fix those problems because you're right there in it with them.
Yeah, it's not just the nurses you're managing, but you have the patients, so it's a partnership.
Yeah, and we have CNAs, therapists, I mean, pharmacists. It's a whole big team. And and working with the patients themselves and their family members to try to get that best outcome for them.
It really is it's a culture. And one of the things that we are seeing, which initially was a little surprised by, but quite honestly I'm not, is we are seeing patients kind of from south, from Hayden, Coeur d'Alene, actually coming up here to utilize our emergency department, to utilize our services. They're choosing to come here.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's, what I've heard and kind of the feedback is that it is just better personalized care. And I think there's always that balance, and I think we do that well.
Well, this is 88.5 KRFY, just so if you've just tuned in, this is the morning show. I'm Susie Perez, and I'm speaking with Dr. Stacy Good. She's a chief medical officer and emergency physician at Bonner General Health, and our registered nurse and acute care manager, Andrew Chapin. And we're really looking at a picture of what we have here in our community with Bonner General Health and how it's meeting our rural medical and acute care needs and surgical and physical therapy and mental health, and the list goes on. So this is a great discussion. I'm learning things. I also want to say again thank you to Bonner General Health for being a vital part of KRFY, our independent community radio station here at 88.5. For being an underwriter, it makes a difference. We have like 38 underwriters in their community. A lot of them are nonprofits, so we appreciate that. If anything else you want to say about the picture of our rural community hospital, Bonner General Health Acute Care Critical Access Hospital. Just good work.
Well, just that we're growing and adapting to the population that's coming in. You know, we have our challenges, but really we're just in it for the community here. We're always exploring new ways that we can help them out.
A true service organization is what I see. Medical is everything. And I like the thought, what you said, Dr. Stacy, that a lot of the people moving in are older, healthy adults, which is a good thing, and also indicates how the hospital grows and develops in its service providing. Well, we also had a couple other things we wanted to talk about today. We wanted to talk about, I think you've already talked about hospital costs, fees, and how that plays out in the balancing and providing for the employees, that you can bring in good care providers, and also what you are restricted by for getting fees back from Medicare and insurance companies. But what is Bonner General Health Foundation, and how does that work?
Yeah, so the foundation is also a nonprofit organization that is associated but also independent from the hospital. And really, they're a philanthropy organization that helps us raise funds for needs that the hospital can't necessarily purchase on their own. We run very close to the line as far as financials every year. It's very consistent, but just kind of right above that positive margin. And so as we continue to grow, we really need help from the community. So the foundation has their own board, and we have a foundation employee that's from Bonner General who works with them and puts on several events during the year, the Heart Ball being one of them, which is coming up this weekend, but also a fun run that they do once a year that provides hometown health grants, which are grants that our managers and directors can apply for specific needs in their department or clinic. And then kind of raising funds and awareness for kind of what's going on in the hospital. So there's an advisory council.
Where the needs might be. You mentioned equipment.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Like new equipment, cutting edge equipment, upgraded equipment, things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a vital part of it. We're going to get back to talking about the Heart Ball that's coming up. But now I want to swing back to the Swing Bed program. This is brand new, and Andrew, you are a critical part of that. Why don't you describe it? I thought it was really smart. And what is the Swing Bed program? And it's transitional care, but can you tell us about
some it? People call it transitional care. It's also known as Swing Bed. So it's a service that we're starting up to offer to the community to help people from that acute inpatient stay transition over to hopefully their goal of going home. We use other rehab facilities in town, but we found that sometimes there's issues that they don't have room. The transition process is clunky and kind of hard to get through. So this just allows the patient to stay with the people that they know. It's the same doctors, same physicians, same pharmacists, nurses,
same CNAs. Bed.
It can be the same bed. Yep. Mm-hmm. You're basically, when the time comes where we have you stable, and let's just say like it's a hip. Let's say you fell when it was icy, in this last couple of weeks, broke your hip. Our doc comes in, patches you up, and we get all your electrolytes balanced. Your vitals are good. Everything's okay, but you just need a little bit of therapy before you go home. Traditionally, we would send you out to a rehab place, but this gives you the opportunity just to stay in-house at BGH. We can, at one moment, you're inpatient, and then we kind of do some computer magic, and you become a rehab patient for us, but you get the same team. And that allows us to take care of you. We know you. It's personalized care. It's and we've seen before when you move from one facility to another, whatever that may be, it takes some time to get brought up to speed. Mm-hmm. For them to get caught up with your medications, to understand where you're coming from, to get to know your family, and that doesn't happen here because we're already up to speed. We already know you, so it helps our community. With all that.
If I could add to that too, the other part of the swing bed program is patients can be sent to our swing beds from other hospitals. So Kootenai, after 72 hours of stay for their patients, they don't, just from a financial perspective, they don't get reimbursed anymore. So they're sitting there waiting for their patients to get into these rehab facilities, which there's always a wait list for. And so they can sit for hours to days trying to get into those rehab facilities. But if those patients, A, are from Sandpoint, or B, don't have to sit in their hospital without rehab, then we have the availability now to bring them here. And so instead of those patients being transferred to Post Falls or even to Spokane and they're from Sandpoint, they can be transferred here. So they're closer to home and they're able to get those rehab services quicker. And then the likelihood of them bouncing back, having to get come back into the hospital for care and or just not rehabbing as quickly is much lower.
Yeah. So the picture is possibly someone from Sandpoint has to go to Kootenai to get a heart procedure or something. And instead of going to a rehab center in down there away from home, they're from Sandpoint. They can come back up here and do it at our Bonner General Health Hospital. And also the added benefit is there's a hospital right there. If something changes during their recovery, there is acute care right there.
Yep.
Instead of maybe a other kind of situation.
Yeah, and the family, you know, the families are up this way. It's easier for them to visit, you know, easier for the family to come in. And I think that helps with the healing and the rehab process too. You know, if you get your loved ones are around you, I think it just promotes some health.
Sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, and the ratio for nurses to patients is also going to be much more improved here than at a rehab facility. So you just get more personalized care. It's just better.
I think the biggest thing is you're not moving to a different facility. Mm-hmm. That can be disconcerting. And healing and recovery is partly dependent on stress and kind of the mood that you're in. And you've already gotten used to the hospital. As you move on through the process of healing, you get to stay there.
Yeah, and I also, for the family, which we haven't really mentioned, you know, I had my dad went through the rehab facility process, and it's a big emotional roller coaster for the family, for their loved one to be in the hospital, and then you finally get used to all the staff, and then you have to move them again, and just the logistics of that are super painful. So just the ease for the family to stay, I think, is just as important as the care for the patient.
How did this come about? Is this common in just rural hospitals, or is this happening all in even larger hospitals, having a unit of like the swing bed unit, the transfer?
Yeah, this goes back. Transition. I can talk kind of a little bit about the operational aspect of this. This is something that John, our now CEO, and I discussed 3 or 4 years ago, is bringing this on. And this is something that is available to rural critical access hospitals, not large hospitals like a Kootenai, because of how they get reimbursed. So it is actually a way that we can get reimbursed better. And it also keeps more patients on the floor, which allows Andrew to keep his census of nurses stable as well. So it's unique to small hospitals. It can't be in big hospitals. But that's kind of, it's how healthcare should be, right? The big mothership hospitals should be doing the acute big heart surgeries. And then when the patients don't need that level of care anymore, how can we bring them down to another level of care? Kootenai is busting at the seams just as much as we are. So if we can offload those to then create more beds for those really sick patients, and we can care for them here with our level of care, then it's a win for both the organizations as well as the patients.
Have you found, how is this a program up and running, the swing bed?
Yep. Yeah. Transition. We did 5 trial patients to in the fall of this last year, and it went really well, and we got our accreditation, and so we're taking patients now. And we just don't do rehab. We also do some nursing care stuff too to help out. So, like if you need IV antibiotics multiple times a day for an infection, then you might be able to stay at the hospital and receive those antibiotics or wound care, some of the nursing things too. So it's not just PT, OT, physical rehab stuff. It's also nursing care that goes along with it that you could stay.
Is there a next step in this understanding the need?
Well, just like we're always adapting, we'll see how it's coming. We've been so busy with just the acute care, side of things, with just the normal sicknesses that we've had for the last few months, that it's slowed down our swing bed program a little bit. But that's because we're meeting the needs of the hospital in a different way. But we have this other program that we can continue to grow as the needs of the community change.
And as the funds for that hopefully we'll bring in from the HeartBall will...
Well, let's talk about the HeartBall.
Yeah.
I think you both know about that. It's coming up, you said, this weekend. It's a fundraiser for the Bonner General Foundation, Bonner General Health Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about it.
Yeah, so, you know, the HeartBall was kind of a mastermind project by George and Howard Simmons, who is also, they're also kind of the founding, one of the founding creators in PAFE, the educational side. And it's an event that goes on once a year. This year it's a masquerade ball. And between the foundation and the hospital leadership, we kind of come up with needs and wants of the hospital, and then we raise funds for that. So this
set
year,
a goal of yes. hopefully raising so much mm-hmm. to cover essential critical needs.
Yeah, so this year it's for the transitional care program, which is going to involve equipment. We need a new nursing call station. It's going to involve FTEs and rehab and nursing. It's going to involve new beds, some infrastructure changes. So there's a lot that's going to go into it to make it ideal. We have it up and running, but it has a lot of potential to be a really kind of bustling service. In the past few years, so, you know, it's really taken off, the HeartBall, and our community has gotten behind it. Last year, we raised for a second endoscopy unit and raised over $320,000. In 2023, we got a second mammography machine. We were backed up with screenings for mammograms for 6 to 8 weeks, and now we're able to get patients in same week, and we raised $440,000 for that. In 2022, it was a trauma x-ray room, and then in 2021, it was for an ED remodel. So it is essential what the foundation and the HeartBall does for the hospital, and it's something that we really need and really rely on, and really grateful to our community to be a part of it.
So this is called the HeartBall. Tell us a little bit about how to access it. Maybe it's sold out. I don't know.
It is sold out. I think there was 40 tables this year.
Where does it take place?
It takes place at the fairgrounds, okay. And there's a whole slew of amazing people that make it look absolutely gorgeous. The doors open at 5 p.m. The event starts at 6 with the dinner catered by the Pack River Store. The menu is created by the premier table, which is bought the previous year. And then there's a live auction and dessert, and then dancing, which is always entertaining.
Is there a live band and stuff like
yeah.
that? Yeah. Okay. Well, you can have fun fundraising for something like the Bonner General Foundation, which is, as you said, critical for, and you're focusing this year on, again, fundraising for
the transitional care
the swing bed program. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, but I will say that, you know, if the event is sold out, but if individuals want to get involved with the foundation, they meet quarterly with the advisory council, and there's a lot of opportunity to get involved. I usually try to bring a provider once a quarter to speak to the advisory council and give updates on the happenings of the hospital, and really encourage anyone who wants to get involved to be there, because this hospital will not survive without the support of our community, and so we really rely on everybody here.
It's essential, as mm-hmm. you say. So any last-minute words, Andrew, RN and acute care manager, Andrew Chapin?
No, thank you for having us on here. I appreciate you bringing to light all the stuff that we're doing and all the ways we're trying to help the community.
I really want the community to know what we have, a gem at Bonner General Health. And Dr. Stacy Good, Chief Medical Officer and Emergency Physician, anything? You've said a lot of information. By the way, this interview will be on our website as a podcast later in the day in case you didn't get to hear it all. So any last minute words?
I would just say that, you know, if any, we are really working hard to change the culture and just the organization as a whole. And so really look for any feedback from our community. I will speak for the senior leadership that our doors are always open. John Hennessy, our CEO, is really active in getting out in our community. And, you know, I wouldn't be in this role if I didn't believe in this small hospital that I think does amazing things.
Well, we're very fortunate to have both of you part of our community that supports our citizens. So thank you very much for coming in. Again, we had Dr. Stacy Good, Chief Medical Officer and Emergency Physician, and Andrew Chapin, RN and Acute Care Manager from Bonner General Health. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks, Susie.
Thank you.